Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Did Anthony Rizzo's tweet about the wisdom of a rain delay strike a chord with you on a day when the Philadelphia Phillies had to postpone more games after a coach and clubhouse worker tested positive? Is it time to question MLB's health and safety protocols?
You know, I really think that Anthony Rizzo was spot on. I mean, the whole idea of this, one of the things that we always talk about is the idea that, well, when you play baseball, you know, there's natural distancing between players. We're seeing now that first basemen more often than not are starting to wear a mask, which is a good idea. We're kind of developing this thing as we go ahead. And to make guys sit in the clubhouse for 8 hours, as he said in his tweet, is just crazy. I mean, it has nothing to do with players saving. It has to do now with getting games in. How are we going to get games in? We got to get games in. You know, we've lost some games and there's natural weather issues, and we only have 66 days in order to get all the games in, so we got to get the games in. Oh, maybe we'll look at winning percentage if it comes to that. Yeah, we don't have to get all the games in. It's, you know, again, I think the showing of the NBA in their bubble made Major League Baseball seem like they just rushed this thing, and it makes it look kind of embarrassing. I don't know that one is going to be better than the other. I don't know that they're not going to have to stop at some point in the NBA. I'm not sitting here telling you that, but that was thought out and that was imagined in a completely different way than we've seen Major League Baseball. And it just seems like it was rushed to put together, and now they're finding out that they've got some issues.
And Rizzo could have actually gone even further. He could have pointed out that the absurdity of all of this in the wake of what happened with the Marlins and the Braves, because it was Don Mattingly, the Marlins manager, who had pointed out to reporters about what Rizzo was complaining about, that there was nowhere to go during that rain delay during the exhibition game they played before the season started, where we think the spread got worse. And Mattingly said something to the effect, we've got a zillion guys in the dugout and there's no way we're social distancing. And Rizzo's tweet reminded everybody they can't possibly do that in for hours during a rain delay. You know, sometimes when you sit down and you plan like a vacation, or you plan a move, or you plan all these sort of big things in life, you don't think about all the details, all the practical details. And that's what this is for Major League Baseball. They thought they came up with every conceivable, you know, plan, every thing to in that 100-some-page protocol. They didn't think of this. And so if you can make the rules up as you go along as it pertains to the rules of the game, you can change the rules in the midst of a pandemic for things that really matter, and that's the health and safety. So I hope that Anthony Rizzo, I'm pretty sure that it did get someone's attention, because not long after he tweeted, they did make a move. But I hope that they go a step further, and I hope that they come up with some sort of plan that addresses the concerns that were pretty valid, as it turns out.
Yeah, I think all of the concerns and everything that the players have stated have all been very valid, and I can't really wrap my head around all these guys hanging inside of a clubhouse for several hours during a rain delay. I mean, let them go. Let them, you know, leave the clubhouse, or, you know, they don't have to go back to their hotels, or they don't have to congregate all together. They can hang out outside or do whatever they want. But, you know, holding everybody in a, you know, very small, tightly conditioned space like that is just, it's not good. It makes no sense. And it definitely makes me question a lot of MLB's health and safety protocols. And of course, you have to say that health and safety are the number one priorities, but I don't know if they really are to Major League Baseball. It doesn't seem that way. And Rob Manfred, you know, we've gone on a million times about how horrible he is, and he's not the only one complicit in this, but he is the commissioner, and the buck should stop with him. You know, it's all under his watch, and each day that he holds the job of MLB commissioner is another day of disgrace for Major League Baseball, because he is inept, he is negligent, he says dumb things, he does dumb things. Resign in shame, Rob Manfred. It's another day that I have to say it. Molly, thank you very much for instilling this into my mind. I'll never forget it. Resign in shame.
Yes, cancer survivor Anthony Rizzo's tweet about the wisdom of a rain delay did strike a chord with me. Look, you got a bunch of guys jammed into a clubhouse that's poorly ventilated, and this is just stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Look, the technology in 2020 is good enough to know way ahead of time if the weather is truly going to break or not. This is a totally different season, which calls for handling rain delays in a totally different way. Don't let a bunch of guys sit in a crowded clubhouse for hours on end. It is simply irresponsible. You have to change your approach to weather delays. You can't have guys just sitting there the way they were. Yes, we've already been questioning the health and safety protocols of Major League Baseball, because if they were up to par and up to standard, we wouldn't have a Marlins outbreak to the level that it is, that it's now, you know, the Phillies have been exposed. That game should have been that series should have been canceled after the positive tests came in for the Marlins. And here we are. We're talking about a whole outbreak and multiple series being canceled. Yes, these health and safety protocols by Major League Baseball are very, very questionable.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm no rocket scientist, obviously, but yesterday was getaway day for the majority, if not every team out there. You know, one of the two teams was changing locations. We only had one, and it was arguably day baseball game. So when you see Mother Nature opening up her wings and letting rain pour down on Cincinnati, why couldn't they have pivoted? Why couldn't they have pivoted and played a day game? In today's social media, there's no fans, so it's not like the fans were going to have to change plans. You weren't taking off of work to go to a day baseball game. I know the TV numbers wouldn't have been as good, but at this point, the network should be happy that there is even baseball on television to watch and to bill and to entertain us. So a easy pivot to a 2:30, 3 o'clock start yesterday shouldn't have been a big deal. It shouldn't have been that hard. Now, maybe we get Mitch Rosen on later, and he can tell us that I don't know what I'm talking about, and there's a lot more in than that, that we can't just change programming that easily. But that would seem pretty obvious to me. I'm glad Rizzo did what he did. Absolutely. Now, let's also, like, these clubhouses are pretty damn nice these days. They're pretty spread out. They're pretty safe, I think. They're not like the old Wrigley Field Visitors Clubhouse that I know Mully and Haw have been into. I have been into. I mean, that was a Cracker Jack box. That was as bad as a college dorm room. That would have been unfit for anybody to be in. But Major League Baseball, that was shameful yesterday. Absolutely shameful.
It's a great question.
When will we see Nick Madrigal make his Major League debut now that service time is no longer a consideration? In an all-hands-on-deck season, do you wonder if the White Sox are fielding their best team?
Well, their best team doesn't take the field if it doesn't include Nick Madrigal. I just think that you can make all the arguments you want about Luis García at second base and the pop he has in his bat and his versatility, but I just am not buying it. You hear it from, you know, from the mouth of babes is what they say. But young Garrett Crochet talked about who stood out in Schaumburg. Nick Madrigal was the first name he mentioned, and I think that it's hard to fathom that the Sox are a better team in a 60-game sprint of a season without one of their top prospects. Maybe he wasn't ready. Maybe he didn't have the greatest summer camp. But all of those potential excuses sound just like that, excuses to kind of justify the service time manipulation. So I think sooner rather than later, I don't, you know, how are they doing the math? One day counts for 2.8 in terms of service time. So you start to get out the calendar, you start to count down. I just feel like if you are truly serious about contending, and this is a team that has playoff aspirations, and you can get back on track as early as tonight with Dallas Keuchel going against the Royals, and you can go in and take 2 out of 3 from Kansas City, get your best team on the field, get your best players in that clubhouse, and make a legitimate run.
Yeah, you know, I think the Sox are probably better than we think they are. I really wonder who comes up first, if it's Mazzara or Madrigal. I'm not sure I understand why this is taking as long as it does, but I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure exactly now that the service time is over, why don't they just bring him up? I would imagine, David, that if they don't bring him up in the next 2 series, then he'll start at home. I don't know why you want to start at home with the guy. I don't know what the difference is. He's played in the ballpark. But if they're waiting, that would be a good spot to bring him up.
You know, they're initially, no, they were not fielding their best team to start the season, and partially because Nomar Mazzara was unavailable, and that's not the fault of anyone. But starting the season without Nick Madrigal on the roster is it's upsetting to me, because I get service time manipulation. You want to have control over these guys for an extra year and this and that. But, Molly, you've made this point before. Nick Madrigal is probably not going to be a player that's going to command a $200 million contract at any point in the future. He is not, you know, going to be one of the richest players. He's not an Eloy or a Louis Robert or a Yoan Moncada. He's not probably going to be an MVP candidate making, you know, $25, $30 million a year. So just, you know, manipulating service time with a player like that is just pinching pennies, and it's just annoying to me, and it's unfair to Nick Madrigal, who I think is already, you know, despite, you know, what we may have seen in summer camp and maybe, you know, not what we expected, and, you know, you thought he'd be here already, but he's got to be a better option than Leury García. He just has to be. Leury García is versatile. He can do a lot of things, switch hitter, but he's not a starter on a major league team that's trying to compete. And I think that, you know, having him in the opening day lineup and playing him so much, as opposed to a guy who was, what, the third or fourth pick overall in a draft, who you think should be your starter at second base for the next 5 to 10 years, it's not right. And the White Sox were not fielding their best team. Hopefully we see Nick Madrigal make his MLB debut sooner rather than later. If it's today, that would be great.
I'm not wondering at all whether the White Sox are fielding their best team. They're simply not. The answer is no. When will we see Madrigal make his debut? Mully, I think you're right. I think it will probably see him make his debut sometime in the middle of the next week when the White Sox return to Chicago. However, if we're going to ask, when do we want to see Nick Madrigal? I want to see Nick Madrigal tonight. Come on. What are we waiting for?
Well, here's the problem. They weren't fielding their best team. And I know it's only one game, but every single game counts. And I don't think anybody in Chicago is happy with the fact that the White Sox only have 2 wins so far. And Danny Mendick started at second base in a game for the White Sox in Cleveland, a game that they lost. And I'm not saying that Nick Madrigal would have been the difference maker, but he had to have been better than Danny Mendick. So that's the issue. in Kevin's right. This guy, Madrigal's never going to be a $200+ million deal. If you're giving that guy $200 million, boy, has the economy shot back up in a great way. So, listen, I hope Nick Madrigal gets a $200 million deal, because that might mean that I get $2 more on my paycheck. So, absolutely, amen. God bless it. But yeah, you know, if anything, I understand the fact that when he was in Schaumburg, or as he's in Schaumburg, he's getting lots and lots and lots and lots of reps. But again, who is he getting those reps against? The one thing the guy can do is he puts a bat on a ball. I know he struck out twice, before anybody reminds me and corrects me. Typical, correct Dustin. I get it. But this this kid should be on the major league roster if Danny Mendick is part of the team. So it's not the best roster out there.
A real axe to grind with Danny Mendick this morning, huh? Okay.
I was letting Nicky Delmonico have the day off.
He needs one.
That's a good, very good question. And I'm not saying any other questions aren't good, but these are good questions.
Did you watch the NBA last night? What did you think of the pregame, the venue, the jerseys, the television show aspect of the return, and did the NBA get it right?
God, I love the NBA. I got to tell you, I felt it was. I had different feelings at different moments. I thought the opening of it was spectacular, and I thought the national anthem that was done by Jean-Baptiste, who is the he's like the band leader for Colbert, right? I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I want to get a copy of that and listen to it. I replayed it. Every time one of the kids came, I would be like, here's a very important social moment. I would go back and play it again because I loved that. I loved that it was kind of atonal, right? It was like a bit off, because guess what? Everything's a little bit off. And I just thought it was magnificent, and I thought it was a beautiful moment. They, you know, everybody interlocking arms, both teams together, the show of unity. I just loved that. And I thought that, you know, after that ended, all of a sudden you're like walking into a video game, right? They had the screen up and fans cheering and stuff. It was just kind of surreal. I'll have to get used to it, right? I'll have to get used to how different it is. But I thought that they really did a great job in terms of a television show, of really trying to send a message along with their game. And it was magnificent. And I really appreciated all the television show aspects of it. They had clearly done a lot of work to try to get this right. And the games themselves were really fun. It was so great to see the NBA. I was delighted.
In the corporate world, I think they call it synergy. Everything from the pregame activities to the TV execution of that show to the games themselves, it could not have gone much better. And I want Adam Silver planning my next big event, because that was really well done. And they did seem to think of every detail. And I think a couple things that stood out, you know, how about the symmetry of Rudy Gobert being the guy that scores the first basket of the restart, the guy who was responsible for, you know, the shutdown back in March, and then he scores the key points in the end when he gets a pass from Donovan Mitchell, the guy who he feuded with, the teammate that you wondered how long they would be friends, and having them kind of in that first game come back and win that. We saw Zion. We didn't see enough of Zion. But I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, the game after that, the Lakers and the Clippers lived up to its billing. Anthony Davis was terrific. You saw LeBron with the lockdown defensive play to win the game and clinch it for the Lakers. But, Molly, afterward, you know, all the things and all the displays and all the powerful messages that were sent, when I heard LeBron say that he hoped that they made Colin Kaepernick proud, that was really something. And that struck a chord, because that does remind you that, you know, this is more, it's about more than just basketball for these players and for this league. And they executed everything last night as well as they could have on and off the court.
Yeah, they had a long time to prepare and get everything in order and, you know, kind of line up whatever they were planning on doing. And it all went off pretty well. I enjoyed everything that I saw last night for the most part. I agree with you, David, though. On Zion Williamson, that was, you know, the main draw for me, all due respect to the Jazz, who are a good team. But, you know, I wanted to see more Zion. You know, 15 minutes, I think he just played, which, come on. It's how long are we going to be babying Zion Williamson? I mean, I understand being careful and you know, easing him back in, and maybe he's not 100%, but oh my God, 15 minutes. Said, give me more Zion. That's all I want is just more Zion Williamson. The play was good. The games were competitive. Everything looked pretty good except for LeBron's hair, which is becoming more and more upsetting and concerning by the day. He just needs to accept it and shave his head already. He's kind of embarrassing himself in that regard. But everything else I thought was pulled off very well. And obviously on Turner, the broadcasts are always great. You're going to get the great studio show that they put on. And I am anticipating watching more NBA all day today. I love that they're doing games all throughout the day. Major League Baseball should be doing that as well, instead of putting most of their games on at the regular, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock start times. You should be having games all day long, every day. There's no reason not to be doing it, and I'm glad the NBA is doing it. And I think, 1:30 is the first one today, so I'll be tuning in for that, too.
The pregame ceremonies were a beautiful thing. It was very powerful to see everyone kneeling, everyone in unison for both games. It was a really great, powerful thing to see. I liked the messages, the little pregame video they played ahead of both games, where you hear the voices of players talking about just the things that impact them in this moment and in everyday life. It was really cool. It was really awesome. No other way to put it. In terms of the venue and the jerseys, I like the jerseys, the message, actually seeing the guys wear the messages we've been talking about for the past couple of months. The television show aspect of it. Oh, one more thing about the actual venue. The screen with the fans is bizarre. They're like giant fans, and
they are. Just,
it's weird. It's I don't know. I'm kind of creeped out by it.
Unsettling. Yeah.
It's unsettling. It kind of
larger than life.
It kind of reminds me of the thing in Millennium Park with the big faces a little bit. You know, that thing always creeps me the hell out. They're always blinking and everything. But in terms of the television show aspect, I like the TNT crew's giant desk. They kept making fun of it, saying it's like Shaq's dinner table. It's like Shaq's box spring. And yeah. I like Shaq complaining that they have to watch the game in separate rooms, and he can't do it. He said he's falling asleep watching the games by himself.
Not used to it.
The NBA did get it right.
Thanks to Mother Nature, I watched more NBA last night than I would normally. I thought it looked really good on television. I thought the play was actually really good. And because of all the downtime we've had, I actually watched some not only professional athletes, but gamers play NBA 2K against each other. And it like had that video game look to it, but in a good way. I mean that in a positive way. I thought the shots on the court were spectacular. I got sick of seeing Zion sitting there sweating mayo. They kept showing him just all puffy and sweaty, looking like me after I cut the lawn or maybe decided to jog around the block or something, just puffy and sweaty, sweating mayonnaise. I didn't need to see. I hope we don't see that shot anymore. I was also thrilled because I had both sides correct in a money line 14 parlay that I hit last night. So I was happy about that as well. Rudy Gobert, he had a name, not his name, on the back of the jersey. Most guys didn't have their name. Shouldn't his name have been Patient Zero?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Oh, I like that.
I like that question because there's not an obvious answer.
On Friday, MLB plans to adopt a rules change to make doubleheaders 7-inning games. Do you approve or disapprove? And of all the rule changes in this truncated season, how does this one fit or not fit?
Well, I think it fits because it is this kind of weird, quirky season. I don't like it on its surface because I think it is the one rule that makes me question maybe the legitimacy of an outcome. Because a 7-inning game, how many games? I want somebody to go back and find out how many games are decided in the 8th and 9th innings. And I know you just backtrack it, but I don't want to quibble because I think the spirit of the rule has good intentions, and that is to preserve the arms of the pitchers who are already going down at an alarming rate. And we're finding out some guys who may have prepared during the pandemic and some guys who just weren't ready for this yet. And the 3-week kind of summer camp wasn't long enough for their arms to strengthen to the point where they could avoid injury. So this is done with the right thing in mind, the health of the pitchers in Major League Baseball. but it does seem very softball-y, kind of, you know, weekend softball to me, kind of the doubleheader, the seven innings, Little League as well. So I get it. I don't necessarily like it, but I think that we're in the midst of a season where you have to try everything to make it work, and this is under that category.
Apparently, after the first doubleheader, Tony Clark and the union got in touch with all their players and had everyone vote on the idea that they shorten or not shorten doubleheaders. One of the ideas was the first game would go nine innings, and then the second game would be the seven-inning game. And they wound up, the preference was 2 7-inning games. So that's what you get. I mean, it's a truncated season. We know that. You're squeezing a lot of games into a short period of time. We know that. There was all sorts of contractual issues getting started. We know that. And this is all kind of a result of that. I don't think that they had thought everything through, or they had realized, as you say, how rough it was going to be on some of the pitchers. And certainly we've seen a lot of big-name guys struggle a little bit. So I guess it makes sense. You know, we want a baseball season. We want this to go ahead without a lot of change to the game itself. And obviously, here we are. You're in season, and you're having to kind of change some things. And I would prefer that they had already figured this out, but I have no problem adapting to what's happening around you. And I think that's what they're doing. And as much as it doesn't appeal to me to shorten the games of doubleheaders, I understand why, and I'm not going to complain about it.
I will. I'll complain about it because I complain about most things. And this does I don't like it at all. You know, if you're going to do this, maybe you should have done it before the Sox and Cleveland played a doubleheader a couple days ago. Maybe save some of those arms in the White Sox bullpen, which have already been quite taxed. But, you know, that's the idea here, is to shave innings off of guys' arms, keep games shorter, keep guys fresher. I understand it, and I get why they're doing it, but that doesn't mean that I have to like it, because I don't like it, because I'm not really a traditionalist, but when it comes to baseball, maybe I do trend in that direction. I don't like a runner on second base to start extra innings. I don't like a three-batter minimum. I don't like seven-inning games. But this season, as you guys said, is hopefully unlike any season that we will ever see again, and it's certainly unlike any season we've ever seen before. So I get all the changes. They're tinkering, and they're fidgeting with things, and they're altering things, and they're going to be doing it all season long. I understand it, but I don't love it.
When we talk about MLB's need to connect with younger fans, one of the things that we talk about is why, you know, the long games are a turnoff. So we've seen things implemented to kind of speed up the game, the extra, you know, the runner on second and extras, the three-batter minimum, and now this rule change to shorten the second game of a doubleheader. It makes sense in terms of speeding up the game, and I'm okay with it. I approve of this one. I don't approve of all of the new rules. I am not a fan of the three-batter minimum. I didn't think I would be. I thought I'd give it a chance. We got through a week of the season. I don't like it, but I think I will like this one. I'm on board.
Well, right now, I really don't care. I understand why we're asking the question. It's a very good question to ask. I'm fine with it. It makes sense because of what's going on. But check back in with me when it goes against the Cubs, and then I'm sure my opinion will change.
You know, Dave, it's a good question.
In a conference call Thursday, the CEO of Churchill Downs Incorporated said Arlington Park likely will go up for sale in the not-so-distant future. That land gets sold, Bill Karstengin said. Is this the first step toward the long-rumored purchase of the land by the Bears to build a new stadium on the site, and do you like that idea?
Well, I love Arlington Park, and it breaks my heart, the idea of it closing. A lot of happy memories going out there with my father, who loved watching the horses. Wasn't much of a gambler. He was a $2 player, but he loved watching it and loved going out there. And we've lost my dad, and it just kind of breaks my heart to see some part of you know, him kind of disappear. You know, makes me long for Mr. D, honestly, because that was a guy that loved Arlington and loved It makes you wish you had the money to buy it and do something with it, doesn't it? Because yep. it just seems wrong to lose something like Arlington Park if indeed that is inevitable. I know they've got a 2-year contract. It just really guts me to lose something as beautiful as Arlington Park and watching the races there. However, I understand that horse racing is dying, and it's not just in Illinois, and it's it's all over the country, and that's upsetting in a lot of different ways. 61,500, that's the capacity of Soldier Field. That is the smallest venue in the National Football League. You will never have a Super Bowl at Soldier Field. I know all the weather concerns and all of that, but you managed to pull one off in New York. That will never happen in Chicago because that's the capacity prevents anything like that. So the Bears do not profit in the fashion in which they should for the way that franchise is viewed, in large part because of their deal at Soldier Field. And, you know, they need to build their own stadium. And whoever ends up running this team in generations to come needs to have the money to make their own building. You know, Jerry's World is profitable. They've turned that into an unbelievably viable operation. So I don't know that you're going to build Jerry's World on that land, but it has been long rumored, and it wouldn't stun me if that ended up happening.
Yeah, this was kind of a big story that hadn't gotten a lot of attention, but I felt like it was almost as definitive as we've heard in terms of, you know, the land will be sold and they're going to move forward. And it's sort of another tradition in a lot of the sports history, as you point out, Molly. Arlington Park kind of closing and going away is sad, and people become wistful about it, and nobody likes to see that. It seems very inevitable. We have heard this rumor for years, going back. The Bears are scouting the land. The Bears are considering this or considering that. And maybe that is an inevitability of the next generation of McCaskey leadership, and maybe that is what they're planning for. I mean, you make really good points about the Super Bowl, about the size of the stadium, and I don't think anybody can argue with those. I personally just hate the idea of moving away from downtown Chicago or moving away from the lakefront, which I think is one of the most ideal venues in the NFL in terms of a stadium. I think there are flaws in the design and certainly the capacity and some of the limitations that they didn't anticipate last time they expanded Soldier Field. I don't like the idea of the Bears playing 13 miles away from Chicago, but I understand that those are some of the realities of professional sports. But if I had to vote today, I would say the question asked, do I like the idea of the Bears moving to Arlington Park if in one day these rumors do come to pass? I would have to vote no.
Yeah, I don't love it either. You know, as somebody who lives in Chicago, it's easy for me to get to, you know, the UC or the Cell or Wrigley or Soldier Field, and the prospect of having to drive out to the burbs to go watch a professional game does not really appeal to me very much. But I totally get it. You guys went through, you know, the capacity at Soldier Field. It's relatively tiny compared to most stadiums in the NFL, and it's all about dollars and cents. What else, right? So what it all comes down to is lining the pockets. So they're going to probably move away from Soldier Field at some point, build a stadium out in the burbs, and they'll be even richer than they were before.
Mully, your point, I get it. The Bears need to have a profitable stadium, a Jerry's World type of place, maybe Virginia's World or something. But no, I don't think they'll leave Chicago. I don't see them actually leaving Chicago at all. I'm not on board with the idea of the Arlington Heights thing.
Now, that might have been the funniest thing I've heard this morning. What would
Virginia's
you think?
World.
Virginia's World? What would Virginia's World look like? I mean, that's very funny, right?
A lot of crosses.
Lots there. We're really short on time. I've got a lot to say about this. I'm going to say this. I hate the idea of Arlington Park closing. I don't understand why they weren't in the sports book game. I think that would have been a great place for a fantastic brick-and-mortar sports book. But why are we so sure it's the Bears and not the White Sox moving to Arlington Heights?
Hmm.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw, The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.